ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय. So today we're starting a new chapter in the sixth canto, chapter 15. Entitled Narada and Angira Instruct Jitaketu. First, I'll read a chapter summary, then text one, which has no purport, and then we'll do text two, which is on the board. In this chapter, Angira Rishi, along with Narada, consoles Jitaketu as far as possible. Angira and Narada Rishi came to relieve the king from excessive lamentation by instructing him about the spiritual significance of life. The great Saint Angira and Narada explained that the relationship between father and son is not factual. It is simply a representation of the illusory energy. The relationship did not exist before, nor will it stay in the future. By the arrangement of time, the relationship exists only in the present. One should not lament for temporary relationships. The entire cosmic manifestation is temporary. Although not unreal, it is not factual. By the direction of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, everything created in the material world is transient. By a temporary arrangement, a father begets a child, or a living entity becomes a child of a so-called father. This temporary arrangement is made by the Supreme Lord. Neither the father nor the son exists independently. As the king listened to the great sages, he was relieved from his false lamentation, and then he inquired about their identity. The great sages presented who they were and instructed that all sufferings are due to the bodily conception of life. When one understands his spiritual identity and surrenders to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Supreme Spiritual Person, one becomes actually happy. When one searches for happiness in matter, one must certainly lament for bodily relationships. Self-realization means spiritual realization of one's relationship with Krishna. Such realization ends one's miserable material life. So the first text, Shishuko vacha uchatur mritako pante patitang mritako pamam shokabibhutang rajanam bodayantau sat uktibihi. Translation, Sri Shukadeva Goswami said, while King Chitraketu, overcome by lamentation, lay like a dead body at the side of the dead son of his, at the side of the dead body of his son, the two great sages, Narada and Angira, instructed him about spiritual consciousness as follows. Now the verse that's on the board. Koyangsya tavarajendra pavamyam anushochati tongchasya katamakrishtau pure danim atakparam koyangsya tavarajendra Bhavanyam anushochati tvangchasya katamakshishtau pure danim atakparam koyangsyattava rajendra bhavanyam anushochati tvangchasya katamakshishtau Pure dani matak param. Please chant. Oyam siyattavarajendra. Babanyam anushochati. Tam chasya katamakshishto. Pure dani matak param. Koyantan chakarajendra bhavanyam anushochati tvangchasya katamakshishto Pure Danim Atakparam Koyam Siat Tavara Jendra Pavanyam Anishochati Tong Chasya Katamak Shishto Pure Danim Atakparam. Tam chasya katamak shishto pure dani matakparam. Vaishnavis, koyang syatavara jendra bhavanyam anashochati tong chasya katamak shishto pure dani matakparam. Koyam syatavara jendra bhavanyam anashochati tong chasya katamak shishto pure dani matakparam. Koyam syatavara jendra Pavanyam anashochati Tang chasya katamak shishto Pure dani matakvaram. So synonyms, kaha, who, oyam, this, syat, is, tava, to you, Raja Indra, O best of the kings, Bhavan, your lordship. Yam, whom? Anashochati, laments over. Tvam, you. Cha, and. Asya, to him, the dead boy. Katamaha, who? Shishtau, in the birth. Pura, previously. Idanim, at this time, at the present. Ataha, param, and hereafter, in the future. So, Srila Prabhupada's translation for this verse. O King, what relationship does the dead body for which you lament have with you? And what relationship do you have with him? You may say that you are now related as father and son, but do you think this relationship existed before? Does it truly exist now? Will it continue in the future? Please repeat. O King, what relationship does the dead body for which you lament have with you? And what relationship do you have with him? You may say that you are now related as father and son, but do you think this relationship existed before? Does it truly exist now? Will it continue in the future? Srila Prabhupada's purport. The instructions given by Narada and Angira Muni are the true spiritual instructions for the illusioned conditioned soul. This world is temporary, but because of our previous karma, we have come here and accept bodies, creating temporary relationships in terms of society, friendship, love, nationality, and community, which are all finished at death. These temporary relationships did not exist in the past, nor will they exist in the future. Therefore, at the present moment, the so-called relationships are illusions. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prashtaya Bhutale Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swamini Tinamine Namaste Saraswate Deve Gauravani Pracharane Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschachadesha Tarne Om Agyana Tamarandasya Agyananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unvilitam Nyena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Svasa Adi Gaur Bhaktivedanta Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So now we're starting this new chapter where Chuchaketu will be slapped into wakefulness, just like Bhaktivinoda Thakur gave us that song. Jeev Jago, Jeev Jago, Gaura Chandraboli. Wake up, living entities. You're sleeping in the lap of the witch Maya. So Angriya Muni and Narada Muni are very mercifully awakening the king who's lying on the floor. We heard in the previous chapter how qualified he was. He's not an ordinary person, highly qualified in terms of physical, mental, intellectual advancement. But here he is, lying on the floor next to the dead body of his child, just like a foolish person. So they're going to wake him up. But before we say a few words about today's verse, I just wanted to go back and just do a little bit of a survey here, a test. In the previous chapter, it was stated that this Chuchaketu had 10 million wives. Now, does everybody believe that? Is this just some story, or do you actually accept? Just to put it in context before you answer. Where's our yesterday? Not here. He's American body, but New Zealand heart. So the whole population of New Zealand, the entire New Zealand, according to their 2009 census, was 4.3 million people. The entire country of New Zealand, 4.3 million people. According to the 2010 census, the population of Los Angeles is, does anybody know? Los Angeles City, not the entire county, the city. 4.7 million, almost 4.8 million people. So if you, to put that in context, Chuchaketu had 2.5 times as many wives as the entire population of New Zealand. He had 2.3 times the population of the city of Los Angeles as his wives. 10 million wives he had in it. City of Los Angeles is 4.7, 4.8 million. Do we really believe that? Or is this just some story? And this is not just some idle question here. Because if we don't accept as truth all the statements of the Bhagavatam, we're not going to make very much progress. We've been mistrained in the Western countries especially, but now all over the world, to think that if I can't conceive of something, if it doesn't make sense to me, my little brain, my little mind, that it probably isn't true. It's not so. And when we have that mentality, then we approach the scriptures with what's called the logic of half a hen, Ardha Kukuti Nyaya, where you take the parts of the scriptures that you like, that make sense to you, and then you reject the rest of it. This I like, makes sense to me, and that I don't like. Especially when it tells me not to do things that I want to do, or to do things that I don't want to do. I don't accept that. You know, certain things, yeah, you have to, you know, use your intelligence to divide, you know. And no. This is called Ardha Kukuti Nyaya, the logic of half a hen. Prabhupada repeat this many times for our benefit because we have that mentality of accepting what we want and rejecting what we don't want from the scriptures, which is a dangerous game we're playing. So Ardha Kukuti Nyaya goes that the foolish farmer, he had a hen who was giving every day at least one egg. But on the other side, the hen was eating grain. He had to supply grain for the hen to eat. So he was thinking foolishly one day, this hen, I like the backside because the eggs are coming out every day, but the front side I don't like because it's eating grain. So let me cut it in half. I'll keep the half that I like and throw away the other half. So you cut the hen in half. What do you have? Nothing. No more eggs, no more anything. So this is what we have to be careful of. If you approach the Vedas, the Vedic literature, the Shastra, with this mentality of cutting it up, this part I like, that part I don't like, you're not going to get anywhere. You're not going to get it. Even on a subtle platform, if we do this, and I'll tell you a story. Some of you may know the story. Once, the great sage Vyasadeva, he had a gathering of his disciples, and they were reciting Bhagavatam. They were going over ninth canto. So in the ninth canto, some of you know this verse. There's this verse, 9:19-17. Matra swastra duhitrava navivek tarsana obhavet. Palavamindriya gramo vidvangsam apikarshati. It says, Matra, your mother. Swasra, your sister. Duhitra, your own daughter. Navavekshasanobhavet. You should not sit next to them. Or Prabhupada says sometimes, don't sit in a solitary place. Why? Palavamindriya gramo. The senses are extremely strong. So strong that vidvangsam apikarshati can take away the intelligence of even a highly learned person. This is what that verse says. So one of the disciples there was a highly learned person, very highly advanced. He was sannyasi. And he was just thinking, didn't even say it out loud. He was just thinking to himself, why is this verse in the Bhagavatam? This is obviously meant for low-class people. What intelligent person would be attracted to his mother or his daughter or his sister for sex life? So he was thinking like that. But Vyasadeva, being avatar, his incarnation of the Lord, Shaktivesh avatar, Trikalagya, he could tell right away this disciple's mentality. Like they say, the face is the innings of the mind, eyes are the windows to the soul. So he could tell. Alright, didn't say anything. So this sannyasi, he goes to his ashram, he has had his own ashram, at night, just preparing to go to bed. Then all of a sudden this violent storm comes up, all this wind and rain out of nowhere. So he's thinking, well, anyway, I'm indoors, I'm fine. He's getting ready to go to bed, just as he's about to take rest. Did I hear something? Yes, yeah, somebody's knocking at the door. So he opens the door, and there in the doorway is the most beautiful woman he's ever seen in his life. Lotus eyes, upturned nose, lotus lips, body like you would die for. And because she came in the rain, there was nothing left to the imagination. So he's wondering, oh my God. And she says, Maharaj, I was on my way to the nearby village, but the storm caught me off guard, and can I stay in your ashram tonight? So he said, absolutely not. I'm a sannyasi. I cannot stay alone with a woman. Slams the door. So he walks away, and then within a minute, he's thinking, oh my God, I'm so mean. I'm so cruel. How could I do this? So he opens the door, and she's still standing there. He says, you cannot stay with me here. I'm a sannyasi. I'm sorry, but I do have another little room just down the path a bit. I'll take you there. So he walks her down the hill, puts her in the room, says, you can stay here tonight. Then he goes back to his ashram, tries to sleep, but he cannot forget this woman that he's seen. She's the most beautiful, God's most beautiful creation. How he couldn't get her out of his mind. So he gets up, he goes back down the path, knocks on her door. This time she opens the door and says, I cannot forget, you're the most beautiful, I have to have you. She said, but I am a single woman, I cannot give myself to anybody outside of marriage. He said, well then marry me. She said, okay, I can marry you. And he said, but you have to marry me now. I can't. She said, but it's the storm, we can get married tomorrow. He said, no, you have to marry me now. She said, but where? He said, in the next village there's a Brahmin, a priest, he can marry us right now. She said, but I'm so tired, I was walking all evening, I cannot walk another step. He said, I'll carry you. So he literally puts her on his back, and he's walking through the storm to get to the village to get married. And as they're going along, the path is getting steeper, and this woman is feeling heavier and heavier, to the point where he falls down on his hands and knees, and he's crawling along. And she gets so heavy that he can't take another step. And he turns around and looks, it's Vyasadeva. So Vyasadeva said, now do you understand? So this is the point. Even the subtlest points of the Shastra, he didn't say it was absolutely wrong and I don't accept it. He was just thinking in his mind that why is this instruction here? I mean, I don't need this kind of instruction. I'm like that. No, everything in the Shastra is perfect. It is there for our benefit, and it will give us the ultimate, lead us to the ultimate goal of life. We should take this seriously. Because even within our own society, this has happened right here on Wanseka Avenue in the 70s. 75, I remember, there was one devotee, because in the Krishna book, there's that story, where it says that King Ugrasena had 43 quadrillion bodyguards. So this so-called intelligent devotee could not accept this. He said, 43 quadrillion, this is impossible. This is just some statement. I mean, how can you accept this? This is scientifically impossible. Right now there's like 5 billion people on the planet. How is it possible that he had 43 quadrillion bodyguards? So he had his doubt. So he voices doubt, and he was taken to Prabhupada. And he voices doubt directly to Prabhupada. And Prabhupada said, this is a statement of the Shastra. We accept it. And then he said something very foolish and flippant. He said, 43 quadrillion, where would they pass through? He actually said that in front of Prabhupada. And because of that offense, within a short time, this person fell down and left. We have to accept all the statements of the Shastras. When it tells us to do something, when it tells us not to do something, we have to accept that. This is Shastra. We cannot bring our tiny little brains in. This is what keeps us in the material world, actually. Because every lifetime, either we convince ourselves or other people convince us that you're intelligent. You don't have to follow anybody or you don't have to follow this book. Just do your thing, and you know, you're a good person. Yeah, you may be a good person to a certain extent, but you're not a transcendental person by your own speculation. You'll never get to transcendence by your own speculation. At the very highest, you'll get to is the Brahman realization. Krishna tells this to Uddhava in the 11th canto, that by speculation, Those philosophers who speculate, they can come as high as Brahman realization, but they cannot go beyond that by speculation. To go beyond that, you have to accept knowledge that's handed down in the succession. You must do that. So the Srimad Bhagavatam, as we say sometimes, and not sometimes, we say, this is there in the Bhagavatam itself, in the first canto, Krishna sa dhamma pagate, dhamma jnana namisaha, kalo nasa dushangesha, puranaka dinodita. That this Srimad Bhagavatam is as brilliant as the sun, and it has arisen just after the departure of Lord Krishna to his own abode, accompanied with knowledge, religion, and so on. Everything, in other words, all good qualities and all knowledge left with Krishna. So he incarnated again as a Bhagavatam to give us light. Persons who are very fortunate will get light from this Purana. Similarly, the Bhagavad Gita. Many of you may be familiar with the Gita Mahatmya, glorification of the Bhagavad Gita that's found in the Padma Purana. So in this Gita Mahatmya, the benefit of hearing every single chapter is explained. So I'll just speak about the first chapter. Once Parvati approached Lord Shiva and said, please explain to me the glories of the Bhagavad Gita. So then he recounted a conversation between Lord Vishnu and Lakshmi, where Lakshmi saw the Lord is lying in Yoga Nidra, apparently sleeping on his Anantashesha bed. I remember when I first went to the Brooklyn Temple in 1973, they had this painting there, that famous painting of Krishna lying with the fires of devastation in the background. Many of you know that painting. And that really just blew my socks off. I had never seen anything like that in my life. You know, we think of God in the Western conception, the Christian conception, an old man with a beard in the clouds. But here's God lying on his snake bed, Ananta, with all the multi-hoods and his fires coming out of his mouth. And where he's lying, on the causal ocean with waves that you can see that these, you know, this is not ordinary. So that really just knocked my socks off. So here's Lord Vishnu lying on Anantashesha, and Lakshmi Devi is questioning him about, you don't seem to be happy. And he said, no, I'm not really sleeping, and I'm not happy. I'm just meditating on the wonders of my energy, my material energy, and how bewildered the living entities become and what it takes to get out of it. So she asked him, what does it take to get out of it? He said, one has to be extremely intelligent, and one has to engage in my devotional service. And this one can learn from the Bhagavad Gita. He said, I myself manifest as the Bhagavad Gita. He said, the first five chapters are my five heads, which is a little bewildering because normally we see Lord Vishnu manifest with one head and multiple arms, sometimes four, sometimes eight. He said, the first five chapters are my five heads. The next 10 chapters are my 10 arms. The 16th chapter is my stomach. And the 17th and 18th are my two lotus feet. And he said, if one is actually intelligent in person and recites a chapter a day, or at least one shloka a day, or half a shloka a day, or even a quarter of a shloka a day, he said, that person will attain the same destination as Susharma. So then Lakshmi said, my lord, who is Susharma? What is his position? What position did he attain? So then he told the story. He said, this Susharma was the most evil, sinful, wretched person. Although born in a Brahmin family, the family did not have any Vedic knowledge, and therefore he simply took pleasure in giving trouble to others. He said, his highest pleasure was drinking liquor and eating flesh. And his occupation was he would go out and collect leaves and sell them in the marketplace. So one day, while he was collecting leaves from the ashram of some sage, he was bitten by a snake and he died. So of course he was immediately taken to the abode of Yamaraj, and he was sent to hell for a very long time and punished. After being in hell for a long time, again, hell is not eternal. Some religions, they think like that. You'll be burned in hell forever, eternally. So then my question to them is this. If somebody can burn in hell eternally, that means, first of all, they're eternal, right? They're not temporary. And secondly, they must not be able to be burned. Because if something can be burned eternally, then it's not really burning. If you take something that can be burned, like a piece of paper, and you light it, it burns and then disappears. But if something is going to burn eternally, it means it's not burning. It can't be burnt. So in other words, you're maybe suffering, you could say eternally, but you're not burning, because you can't really burn if you can burn eternally. Anyway, so Susharma was sent to hell, suffered for some time, then he was given the body of a bull. And this bull was acquired by a crippled person who used to load him up every day with massive amounts of weight and then take him for his job. So after many years of doing this, one day he loaded the bull was going along, and he just collapsed on the ground, unconscious. And people, being very compassionate, they all gathered around, and then first one man said, I will give you a portion of my pious results in my life, because you're such a great creature. And everybody started saying, yes, I'll give you a portion of my pious karma, like that. And then there was one prostitute in the crowd, and she said, yes, I will also give you whatever pious credits I have. So then the soul of the bull was taken before Yamaraj, and Yamaraj said, you're now free. Based on the pious credits that you got from that prostitute, you are now free. You'll take birth as a human being. No more suffering. So he took birth in a high Brahmin family, but he could remember his past lives. So after some time, he saw that prostitute, and he went to her, and he said, Mother, please explain to me, I am confused. What pious credits did you have that was so powerful that immediately gave me a human birth? And she said, well, I have this parrot. And she introduced him to the parrot. And every day he recites the first chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. So he went to the parrot and said, where did you... And he said, well, I myself was a brahmana, because the parrot could also remember his previous life. I had been a brahmana in my previous life, but I committed so many sinful activities that I was cursed and went to hell and suffered, and then I took this birth as a parrot. But I was still so sinful that immediately my parents died and I was left alone. I was in agony on this hot sand, and then this sage came along and found me, took me to his ashram, put me in a cage. But in the same ashram there was a gurukula, and every day the children would recite the shlokas of the first chapter of Bhagavad Gita, and so gradually I learned them. And I started reciting myself. And then I was stolen away from that ashram and sold to this prostitute. So Lord Vishnu was telling this to Lakshmi, that this is the glory of hearing just the first chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. If you just hear this repeatedly, recite that chapter, then you will get ultimate destination of life. Like not even a whole chapter, one shloka every day, or half a shloka, or even one quarter of a shloka every day. So this is the benefit of the scriptures, and we should not take it lightly. We should not try to cut it up. Many people do that. And even now, some of our new people that are coming to the bhakti house, they like the chanting, they like the dancing, they like the prasadam, but they don't like where it says, don't do this and don't do that. They don't like that part. But you have to take the whole package. You can't take this part and leave the other part aside. You can't do that. It doesn't work. So here, Chitraketu, he's more advanced. So when he's instructed by Narada and Angira, he's not going to do that. He's going to take the entire instruction. So, as is the way of the gurus, the first thing they do is they slap him. They're waking him up. What is this relationship with this so-called son? And you're thinking you're a so-called father. You're not at all related. Krishna also did this to Arjuna. Second chapter of Bhagavad Gita, text 11. Shri Bhagavan Uvacha, Sochan Anvasocha Strong, Pragya Vagnam Chabhasi Se. Katasums Agatasums Cha, Nana Sochati Pandita. He said, because previously they were speaking like friends, but now that Arjuna surrendered, that I'm your Shishya, now Krishna immediately, the Prabhupada said on one time he lectured on that verse, immediately the guru slaps, wake up. He cuts him. He says, you fool, you think you're still learning, but you're lamenting for that which is not worthy of lamentation. An intelligent person doesn't lament either for the living or the dead. So Angira and Narada are doing the same thing to King Chitraketu here. They're saying, you know, you're such an advanced personality, but you're lamenting over something that's not worthy of lamentation. This so-called son is not really your son. By the arrangement of providence, we're brought together for some time, and then again we're dispersed. When Prabhupada was here, he was on John Lennon's estate, and John Lennon and Yoko Ono approached him. And Yoko asked him, she said, Swamiji, can you guarantee that we'll be together in the next life? And Prabhupada said, no. He said, this is not our business. Our business is to give you the means by which you can be liberated, not to guarantee that you're going to be with this person or that person. But on the other hand, Prabhupada said, we're all part of the ISKCON family, and we will go together to the spiritual world. There will be an ISKCON in the spiritual world. We'll all be there together. So if you really like each other, and I like you all, you're all very nice people, I wouldn't mind being with you in the next world, then we have to stick to this process of Krishna consciousness, stick to this chanting of Hare Krishna, and then we'll be together in our next life. So we can stop here. Any questions, comments? Yes, Acharya Narottam Prabhu.
Thank you, Prabhu, for your wonderful class.
Sometimes
we see that females, persons approach to the Krishna consciousness process. Male devotees, sometimes they get in contact with those new people. So you were explaining that we shouldn't spend time, too much time in a solitary place.
No, that's not what I said.
Okay.
The verse says one should not actually, not sit on the same seat with one's mother, sister, or daughter. And Prabhupada, when he was speaking on that verse, he would say, should not be in a solitary place.
Exactly, in a solitary place. So, for a preaching purpose, how can we apply what you're saying in a situation of preaching, when we preach like a Maharaji, for example? Until what extent we should spend time together in a solitary place?
Should not be preaching in a solitary place. If you go out in Sankirtan, let's say, book distribution, you're not in a solitary place. That's a public place, generally speaking. We don't advocate too much that people go alone door to door. We've had so many, Rasananda Maharaj, well, not Maharaj anymore, but when he was Maharaj, he was telling me the story that he was in Brazil. There was book, door-to-door book distribution. So this brahmachari, one of their leading distributors, went to one door. Door was opened by some beautiful woman with nothing on. And that was the end of his brahmachari life. That was the end of his Krishna conscious life. So we don't recommend going door-to-door alone. Now, generally speaking, the Sankirtan devotees are going out alone. Sometimes in together, but generally speaking alone. But that's in public. So if you approach a member of the opposite sex in public, of course, naturally, because they're not yet Krishna conscious, their vibe may be a little different from yours. And actually, you use that to your advantage if you're intelligent. Not in a crude way, but for making them advance. We've had so many very beautiful women in ISKCON who went out and distributed books. Such as, I mean, no, many of you probably don't. There was one, Matsuri Sikandini, who we used to call her Mother Seek and Destroy. She was so beautiful. When she would go to the airport, oh, Omkar is here. She knows her also. When she would go to the airport, all the guys would just, they would be, if when she would stop them, Hare Krishna, they would immediately, So they weren't stopping for the right reason, but she would use it to her advantage to sell them a book. So that's okay. So if we're preaching, and we don't allow ourselves to fall into Maya. In other words, we stay sheltered by having good sadhana, chanting even while we're out there. Then yes, it's unavoidable. The society that we live in, imagine if the brahmacharya is only distributed to men and the women only distributed to women, we'll probably not be as effective as we are in distributing our books. But one should always be mindful though that the material energy is extremely powerful. So if you start thinking that, yeah, I'm such a charming guy, or I'm such a beautiful woman, and, it's on the strength of my beauty and on the strength of my charm that I'm distributing these books, you're going to fall down, guaranteed. But if you understand that it's by the mercy of my spiritual master, it's by the mercy of Krishna, that I now understand a little bit about spiritual life, and I'm, by their mercy, not my strength, I'm able to stick to some sadhana, and therefore I have a little bit of potency for distributing books by their mercy. If I have that mentality, then I'll be safe. But as soon as we start thinking, yeah, I'm really good looking and I'm really good, and I always say the right thing, I make them laugh and like that. If I start thinking like that, then guaranteed you're going to run into trouble. It's happened repeatedly. So an intelligent person learns by hearing. You hear the pitfalls about the dangers on the path of Krishna consciousness and then you avoid them. Second class intelligence means you hear, but then you have to experience yourself, the pitfalls, and then, okay. A third class intelligent person, least intelligent, they hear, they experience, and they still can't get it. They have to go on suffering. So we should at least be on the second class platform. If we can't be on the first class platform of hearing and then avoiding trouble, then at least when we get into trouble ourselves, then we should, okay, now I understand, and avoid trouble for the rest of our Krishna conscious career. Don't be like the third class person that they hear and they suffer like criminals. It's not that they don't know. they hear it's not good to steal. Just like you wouldn't like somebody to take your property, don't take anybody else's property. But no, they still go out and they steal. So they get caught, they get thrown in jail, and then they come out. And because they have no intelligence, and they do the same thing over there. You get career criminals. Over and over again, they do the same thing. They get busted, they do the same thing. This is really mudha, foolish rascal. So we shouldn't be mudhas. We should at least be in the second platform, where if you make a mistake, you get burned, don't make the mistake again. Okay, Granth Rachimit Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.